There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th, and every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
Let's talk.
Johnny Brown.
I have been looking forward to doing this interview all week. Backstage Chronicles by Carl Miller is the story of rock and roll, which cannot truly be told without the special Spinal Tap tales of the Road Crew, the unbelievable, the unmentionable, the unimaginable, and quite frankly, the unedible, probably all in this book. Delighted to say that the man who has worked with more artists than I can shake a very large stick at, but for example, Cat Stevens, I believe Iron Maiden in the mix, more. Anyway, cut to the quick. I'm delighted to say that probably the man has eaten more bad catering than any of us have had to do. Carl Miller, author of Backstage Chronicles. He's laughing now, but he joins me now. Carl, I am doffing my cap to you, sir. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Josh. Thanks for having me on, mate.
Pleasure. I'm just happy to see that you're not on, you know, the back of some porter cabin with a bunch of leads sticking out of you, going, when did anybody see the drummer? And that is not Sherbert.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, just give me a little bit about why you are the man to speak to about this particular dark art.
I don't really know that, John. I guess it's because I had the habit of falling into farce and nonsense.
So, where did it all begin? Do people grow up and say, yeah, I want to be a roadie? It doesn't sort of happen to you, just sort of fall into it, and if you
they don't advertise in the paper for them, do they? No, it started out, we go back to the 60s now, and actually I started hanging out with a band called The Inbetweens. And anyway, I've been around for them for a while. They eventually split up, and part of them went and formed a band called Slade, who a lot of people might have heard of. The other part got a gig as a backing group for American vocal groups like the Temptations and the Four Tops, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So anyway, when they got the job offer, they asked me if I'd go along with them, help them out. I said, sure, because I'd picked up a few tricks by then. And as a consequence to that, I bumped into a guy a couple of times who worked with a band called The Move.
Roy Wood and all that, yeah?
Roy Wood and Carl Wayne, et cetera, yeah. And he recommended me to a band called The Foundations. So I went from the in-betweens doing that job for £3 a week to moving to the Foundations for £20 a week. So there was, that was it, really. And that's how it started from there.
So back in that, is this your basic driving the van, pointing them the right way, putting them the right way up, making sure the stage is relatively well, you know, what are you checking on? I mean, are you checking on are you doing the rider? Are you getting there and checking, setting up the lights? Because obviously these days it's an industry and everything is planned to the nth degree. Back in the 60s, it's psychedelia. It's that time of, hey, you do it. Yeah, but you're also doing a lot of shows. So what was the average sort of kind of gig like in the 60s to set up?
Well, for a start, touring wasn't really an operative word. We just kept gigging.
Yeah.
I mean, the Foundations didn't tour. They just kept gigging and gigging and gigging because You might know, Giles, that's how a band used to earn its money on the road those days. They didn't get money from records, or virtually nothing. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So anyway, that's really how it started. But, of course, the industry's evolved such a lot now. When I first started, you know, I mean, you could go to some places in the early days and, you know, there wasn't enough sockets to plug the equipment in. You know, little clubs like that, you know. But, of course, now it's got more, any equipment, the technology, sound systems, lighting. In the old days, you know, there was no such thing as a rider. Riders didn't really manifest themselves till the early 70s. But so in the old days, we used to have to sleep in the van or find a transport caff somewhere, you know, that kind of thing.
I mean, I'm just thinking of the physicalities of, you're in a van, everybody's in the back, you know, as the book, was it Henry Rollins' book is called Get in the Back of the Van. You've got your kit with you. You're all sleeping there. It's basically you and four or five members, hopefully all blokes. If there's a woman involved, we know at Houston, we have a problem. Have you got your own sort of PA system then with that? Are you using what, I mean, do you know what you're going to get when you turn up? Are you carrying any of the sort of, you've presumably got the amps and the preamps and the pedals. What have you actually got?
The back line was taken with us. I mean, in the early days, going back to the in-betweens again, that you know, you turn up at a gig and, you know, to use whatever PA they'd got. You know, and some were quite, you know, just pre-war almost, you know. But, and then when I joined the foundations, Marshall, you might have heard the name Brandmain Marshall. They started with a couple of columns. And then there was a company called WEM, W-E-M, that started. And from, you know, a little, you know, PA system, it started to grow up to, you know, 200 watts, 400 watts, you know, 500 watts, plus, kept on going. And that's, I would say, about 68, around 68, that's when sound systems started to really, you know, develop as we see them now, with upfront mixers, et cetera, like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that strikes me is we're heading into the murky, beautiful world, man, of psychedelia, and there are happenings, and people are dropping lava lamps, and, you know, they're doing all sorts of interesting things with lights. Is that a problem for you when you're trying to set up? I mean, are you now taking, you know, bigger speakers? Have you got a tour bus, that sort of thing? I mean, when did you actually start to sort of... Because the thing I love about this period of is nobody's ever done this before, so you're kind of discovering it as you go along.
No, you're absolutely right there. You're absolutely bang on. You were picking these tricks up as we went, you know. It's very much learning on the job, if that makes sense, you know. And what we used to do, I mean, lighting really was a thing. I mean, Pink Floyd really started the whole thing with lighting, as you probably know, you know, their light show. But then, you know, when I started with Cat Stevens, we started to get into production as well, because his management company weren't a traditional music outfit. They were a theatrical company. And so his manager was very much into musicals and films and stuff like that, because a lot of his clients were like actors and film directors. And so we introduced, you know, props, you know, curtains, drawing backwards and forwards curtains, drapes, all that sort of element came into it. And I think Cat Stevens was probably the first to really, you know, get theatrical with contemporary music.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because obviously if you've got Slade, then it's, you know, turn everything up to 11 and go for it, and let's blow the kids off their platform boots at the back of the hall. But with somebody like Cat Stevens, who, beautiful stuff, Catch Bullet 4, you know, A Tease in the Fire Cat, you're not trying to do the Who at Wembley, are you? You want people to listen in a good way. So it's a different setup, and it's a different, you know, if Cat Stevens had come on and gone, you know, hello, Miami, people have gone, yeah, that's not quite the Cat Stevens that we kind of know. So that's a different aspect, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, no, Cat Stevens is very, well, you might call it intimate, you know, these shows, you know. Ideally, his shows would go better in a theatre rather than, shall we say, you know, a town hall.
Sure.
You know, because, you know, you've got the intimacy in a theatre, as you know. And You know, so it worked a lot better there, especially with the props and the scenery and all the changes and stuff like that, you know.
One of the things that, that strikes me, and people don't think about this, is but when you are setting up a backline, i.e. all those bits and pieces that go to make up a gig, you can be doing this with very little sleep. You can be doing it having come off the back of, you know, driving through the night, the whole bits and pieces. You haven't eaten very well. The band, you know, the bass player's fallen out with drummer and the singer's gone off with somebody's girlfriend, as they always do. It's raining. You're trying to set stuff up. And people don't think about this, but it's actually quite a dangerous environment to work on. People slip, they fall, they get electric shocks, lighting rigs fall. Just think about Curtis Mayfield. I mean, you've compiled these stories, but I mean, how close to the wire do we get sometimes in those early days?
Oh, yeah, that's a really interesting question. And funny enough, you're the first person to ever ask me that. But I can remember certainly one time in America, we had what they call a flying PA, which was columns on the stage plus going in the air, you know. And during a sound check, the tackle, you know, the rigging broke, and the whole one side of the PA that was flown in the air collapsed, and it smashed about the first three rows of seats.
Blimey.
In the audience, yeah, during a sound check. So good job it didn't happen during a show. But that's one occasion I remember distinctly.
I think Judas Priest has got a story about some bit of lighting coming loose during a show once and literally swinging like a morning star, flailing from sight and just missing Halford by literally inches before taking him out.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's many occasions like that. There's more than, you know, one you can imagine incidents like that. I mean, this, the health, of course, don't forget, you know, health and safety regs have got a lot tighter over the years as well. I mean, going back to what I was saying earlier about sometimes, you know, you, in the early days, you could go to a gig and plug in and blow the whole lot.
Mm.
You know, no show.
So as sort of the 70s rolls on, I mean, Cat Stevens takes a step back because he's that artist. What do you find yourself doing then? I mean, are you just basically kind of gun for hire? I mean, you know, do you just start doing road magic because you're the only one who can take it? Because as I said, I've worked on quite a few concerts and it's chaos theory and crisis management at all times. So, you know, have you got that particular skill set? I mean, is it to be unruffled during the whole situation?
Yeah. Calm's the word, as they say. Calm's the word, you know. We would, I mean, and also it got departmentalized as well, the whole thing, starting with just a couple of roadies. And, you know, then as more crew came on, you know, departments started to appear from that. So I went from doing a jack of all trades, which is probably a great thing, really, because I knew a lot about, well, not, I wasn't an expert, but I knew a lot about it, all the things that needed to take place, if that makes sense. So then I progressed right through and became the tour manager. Rather, and then I was in control of not just the band, but the crew as well. You know, so I used to do the hiring and firing as well, you know.
And when you're doing a sort of a European or North American tour, that is months, I mean, years of planning in advance, presumably, Carl, because you don't just think, okay, throw everybody in the back of the tour bus and off. I mean, but that's what, if you watch some of these films, you just think everybody hops on the back of the bus and goes, right, point it towards, I don't know, Fillmore East.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, with Cat Stevens as an example, I mean, in those days, we used to do an album a year. I mean, it's not unusual now for an artist to take 3 years to make an album, but then it was really pressure was on. So it was album tour, and it's the way it went all the time. So immediately one tour finished, you know, we would go into recording, and during the recording process, I'd be planning the next tour ahead. So probably working like about 12 months in advance, you know, because it's not just slapping a load of gigs together. It's getting the routing right, you know, because you can, you know, lose an awful lot of money by having bad routing, believe it or not.
So if you're,
you know,
if you're
zigzagging all over the place.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you've got one gig in Dusseldorf and the next day you're supposed to be in Milan and then you're back in Paris, then you've got a problem, yeah?
Oh, yeah, you're all over the place, yeah. So, you know, things like that have to be calculated in as well.
One of the interesting things, well, people probably won't understand this, that you presumably never actually get to see much of the show itself, because if you're working in concerts, you're at the back, you're planning everything for the next move. Because people say, oh, it must be really glamorous, because you get to see all these wonderful acts. And I've worked with people, and they go, I've never even heard that play. They just go on. I'm in the back office, and I'm planning how to get out of here, the breakdown.
Yeah. 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 No, you're right. I mean, you see snatches, of course, but you don't see a whole show all the way through. I mean, you know, when Can't Sing Zara, my job really on that, when he was on stage, I used to stay in the wings all the time, because apart from the guitar techs and stuff that would, you know, change his strings if he bust one, I would have to be in the side of the stage as well, you know. But every now and again, I could pop out and just, you know, I used to pop out and just get a feel for the audience, because he would ask a question after the show, what did you think? You know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, you have to kind of, absorb that as well, you know.
Local promoters, Carl. Local promoters. Yes. So you rock up with a band and you might be in somewhere in the back of, I don't know, somewhere in Spain, somebody in the middle of Spain. You are the biggest thing that has come through this town in 10 to 15 years, and everybody wants a piece of the action. What is it like trying to deal with local authorities, local promoters who bring all their mates with them, people trying to get, in the back, round the sides? I mean, there must be some very interesting stories about that.
Yeah, no, there's all sorts of stuff. I mean, the most interesting one, that subject is, I remember doing, we were touring a European tour, and we played Yugoslavia, as it was in those days. I mean, it was a communist country.
Yep.
Still, albeit, you know, a lightweight communist country, but it was a communist country. Anyway, got in there, and first of all, the power was inadequate, you know, and we had to have our own generator brought in. So that was number one. Number two, during the sound check, you know, there was people all over the place, you know, because this is something like bizarre going on for them, you know. So we have to try and get them out. Anyway, fine. Come to doing the show, I'm going to call the house lights down, and I'm suddenly stopped. Can't have the lights down. Oh, no, why? Anyway. I go to Count Stevens and I said to him, look, you know, we're going to have to go on without that. But the stage lights, it's got to be the house lights full on. He said, well, I'm not going to go on then, you know. I said, well, we've got no choice. He says, go and tell him I'm not going on. I said, Steve, I call him Steve. I said, you go and tell him he's got a bloody machine gun. So we had to do the show with the house lights on. And the reason was they didn't want the audience getting up to mischief.
Ah, okay.
So the police... You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So the police could keep an eye on them. If there was light, if it's dark, they don't know, you know, they're so paranoid, you know, it's really bizarre.
I just like the fact that you call Cat Stevens Steve, because otherwise shouting Cat across, if you miss him and you're shouting across an auditorium, Cat, then somebody's going to say, I saw a tabby there last week.
Yeah, Tiddles here. Come.
Tiddles. Now, this is a book, I mean, have you brought together other people for this book? Ask other people on the road, because obviously when you get to the more extreme versions, I mean, I mean, I'm not saying that you got Motley Crue's tour manager, because that is probably a tour from hell, but there have been some interesting tales of sort of rock and roll excess and making sure the band's point the right way, and Ozzy wandering off somewhere with Dave Lee Roth and not being seen for 15 days. I mean, were people quite happy to sort of give up stories of life on the road?
Sure, yeah. I wanted to do that because, as you probably know, I mean, most of the books about the music industry are all about me and, you know, wasn't it a great show and we did this and we did that. And it's always the artist in the books. And I thought, well, you know, why not get some of the crew and some of the management side? Because quite frankly, I think they've got more interesting stories to tell. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? You know as well as I do. You know, you've been there. You know what it's like, the banter and the repartee backstage is just outrageous. You know, let's get these guys in, have a bit of limelight. You know,
I've got a friend who I work with who's this Ecuadorian guy, who's about 18 foot tall, and he's known as Fran the Man Ramirez, right? And we find ourselves in these situations doing gigs, you know, concerts and all, everybody from, I don't know, Madness to the Sugar Babes to George Benson to whatever. And every time we find ourselves in this situation and we look at each other and say, we are never going to do this again. Yeah. And every time we say, and then next year we find ourselves, I don't know, me, you know, single-handedly fighting off the Michael Bolton Finnish fan club, which happened one time. We just look at each other and laugh and go, nobody will believe these stories.
Oh, no, yeah. No, it does go on. And that's what I say, you know, that's why I wanted a few of the guys in the book as well, you know, that have the, you know, and give them a bit of limelight, of course. But, you know, as I said, most of them have got much better stories because, you know, they see the business in a bigger way, in a bigger bubble, if that makes sense. The artists are in a smaller bubble, but the road crew, I mean, they're mixing with the audience. They're mixing with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're talking to people on the street while they're loading gear, you know, things like that, you know, whereas the artist just comes from a hotel in a limo, parked by the stage door and straight in. You know, they don't really have any communication with, apart from their intern themselves.
Yeah,
but the crew are out there mingling with everybody, you know.
Apart from, obviously, the rider. Now, explain the rider, because that can be everything from... there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Carl just threw his hands. He just looked towards... Now, the rider is not something to get you around the state. It's not a golf buggy. Explain the rider, and sometimes the rider can drive you up the bleeding wall. Explain, Carl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, the rider basically is an addendum to the contract itself. And so it was invented, I think we were one of the first to use it.
So it's your fault, days. It's your fault, Carl. Yeah?
Yeah, probably, always is, always was. it started off as, you know, it was only something like about six requests, you know, to start with. You know, or off a dozen, it's something like that, you know, an addendum, because, you know, we had to sort of say things like, we must have adequate power supply. Now, that's not written into a legal contract. Do you see what I mean? So it's an addendum to the contract.
Sure.
That the power supply must be adequate, blah, blah, blah. So it really started as, you know, things that were essential. And then it got ridiculous, you know, because people started taking the pee. You know, like, you know, I only want brown M&Ms. You know, the famous M&M one.
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
You know. And then it got silly. I mean, and now, of course, it's got to the point where, you know, and of course, in the old days, there was no such thing as catering, backstage catering. That, again, came into play further down the line. And so then, of course, now you've got people that are vegans, you know, vegetarians, this, that, and the other, you know, you can't, you know, they're allergic to something.
Wind,
you know,
chimes.
So you can't have this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No onions, whatever, you know.
So, what are you up to these days? I mean, have you taken a grateful step back from the home office and letting somebody, because it is kind of, I mean, I'm just amazed, like bands like AC/DC, you know, Tull, Judas Priest still on the road at this point.
Yeah.
You know, with the original rock, with their guitar techs. I mean, the guitar tech is, you know, anybody who thinks that a guitar tech just hands somebody a guitar is, you know, they are brilliant musicians.
No, no.
They know the stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They can play all the numbers to step in. You will go out with your guitar tech, your drum tech, whatever, because they know how you like it. So it's still, it must be a tough business touring when you're in your, should we say, your golden period, Carl.
Well, yeah. Well, it is for tour manager and crew.
Yeah.
I will give you that. I think with the band, it's not too bad because they're cushioned an awful lot. You know, I mean, my neighbour Ian Hill, he's the bass player in Judas Priest, and you know, so I'm still, you know, hanging out with Ian all the time.
Yeah,
but you know, he's you know, they get 5-star hotels, they get, you know, business class travel, you know, nice motors on the road, you know, all this, that, and the other. So they're cushioned. It's not so bad for those guys. I mean, for example, say the Stones.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
they've all probably got their own Learjet, for God's sake, you know.
The only time they see each other is actually when they step on stage together, isn't it? That's the thing.
Exactly.
With
yeah, they even have separate dressing rooms, you know.
So what was the moment then, Carl, in your professional, you know, that you looked across the stage and thought, this is what I do, and I'm living my quote unquote best life. I know you've got moments like that still to come. I'm not saying you're about to give it all away, but what point do you think you look across and you get that moment of connection where it all hits and you just start grinning like a loon?
Yeah, the moment of satisfaction, I guess you could call it, couldn't you, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that, yeah. I mean, there are, well, there are many times, not just, doesn't happen every once or twice. It happens quite a lot. But then by definition, you've got the yin and yang where, you know, some days it hasn't gone completely the way it ought to have gone, you know. So, it, you know, it's give and take on that. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
It's putting a crew together. It's you know, picking, because you've mentioned these things are done, you know, weeks in advance, months in advance, years in advance even. Is it sort of the ultimate pirate captain's job? Because you're picking your own particular crew and you go, right. And there is that sort of mentality, isn't there? Because you are the guys who are sleeping under the stage, you know, grabbing. I mean, there's a meme going around about what people think backstage is like. And it's all sort of half naked groupies with champagne like Lynyrd Skynyrd. And it's, in fact, it's a bunch of sort of tubby guys in Megadeth T-shirts lugging something around, you know. So is it you put the group together because they can take it and that's half the fun?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. In fact, a lot of the guys I worked with, I mean, a chap in the book, a guy called Jock McLean, who's an American friend of mine, well, really good friend of mine. I mean, he was the original, he worked at the Shea Stadium gig for the Beatles in the early days.
Yeah.
And this, that, and the other. And we kept on working together one way or the other right until we both retired a few years ago. And another guy I worked with an awful lot on loads of different tours, because if they're available, I'd have them in because I knew them well. We got on well. Do you know what I mean? And I knew their work ethic and all that stuff. And another guy called Dick Bell, who Iron Maiden's fans will really know, because he was production manager with Maiden for, 30 years?
Wow.
You know, so... So, you know, I mean, it's not a come and go sometimes. You know, sometimes you're a staff member, if that makes sense. You know, you're on a pension scheme. You know, so say Dick was with Maiden for, well, getting on for 30 years.
Because, again, that's a theatrical show with the trooper and all that, and people want to get a certain sound. It's a big setup. It's a big breakdown as well. You have to know what you're doing, and you have to know that you're not hiring some local guy who's too busy taking selfies and trying to get autographs or get hold of one of the backing singers. Just quickly, women in the business. I spoke to, I forgot her bleeding name now. Is it Kathy who was she was with Lemmy for ages, with Motorhead. She was there. And she was saying that there are more women in the business, though. Obviously during the 60s and 70s it was a predominantly, you know, a boys club, and it has changed. It has changed slightly because, you know, obviously women on the road, it was a pretty hostile environment.
Sure. Yeah, no, you're right. It was very very blokey, you know, in the old days. And of course, you know, the banter and the jokes were, you know, that way inclined as well. But now, yeah, there are much more. I mean, I think started around the 80s where women started to get more and more, you know, involved. And, of course, you know, a lot more girl groups around as well. So, you know, it goes without saying that they're, you know, going to prefer probably, you know, girls working with them, you know. But, and of course, you know, as a consequence of more females getting involved with the job, it's become a little, well, how can I put it, PC.
Yeah. But it's not a bad thing. When you see...
Not a bad thing at all, no.
When you see modern concerts then, when they all set up and it's all like an experience now, and you've got the meet and greet, you've got the merch, you've got the whole bits and pieces, do you sort of look at it and go... Blimey, you guys have got it somewhat easy because I was somewhere on the A something between Rochdale and...
Yeah. Funny enough, yeah. I mean, again, talking to my friend Dick, we often have a conversation. I mean, and we've often said to each other, I don't, you know, I wouldn't know really where to start now, you know. And the things have changed so much. One example I'll give you, Giles, is... you know, when I put my shows together, I always used to have my attitude backstage was to have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I used to have a party atmosphere backstage. And, you know, a few of my contemporaries would agree with me. And the reason for that was if it was a great atmosphere backstage, it'd be a good atmosphere on stage. But the last few gigs I went to, I can assure you it was like a bloody doctor's clinic. Backstage, it's so sterile, you know, everybody's like, you know, shuffling about quiet as a mouse and this, that, and the other. And I'm going, you know, this is just no atmosphere backstage, you know.
if you've ever worked with Simply Red, then you can only refer to a certain person as Mr. Hucknall, and you cannot look him directly in the eye nor speak to him. And that was an interesting gig, Cole.
Oh, I wouldn't have put up with that, quite frankly.
I'll tell you a story off air, but I very nearly, let's not even go there. Listen, I'm going to run out of time. The book is called Backstage Chronicles. It's by Carl Miller. Carl, listeners, you can order it. Go into our bookshop, click on the front page, and it'll come to you. There's a little thing, and a very nice picture of him on the back cover as well. Do you do the, is there a website, Carl? Do you do social media? Do you TikTok?
No, I don't, to be honest, Charles. I can't be bothered.
Well, what people can be bothered to do is go and order the book. It's called Backstage Chronicles. It's on the TRE Virtual Bookstore. It's by Carl Miller. Carl, it's been an absolute blast to speak to you this morning.
Ah, my pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me on.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.